The CBS News Weekend Roundup, coming up next.
Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Posting your job in just one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites, and now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with one single click. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll in to ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No more juggling emails or calls to your office. You can quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 800,000 businesses. And right now, listeners of the show can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. One more time so you can try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup as the world is shocked again by an act of terror. That's the police gunfire that ended the attack on a crowded seaside boulevard in Nice on the southern coast of France. They killed the truck driver who had mowed down hundreds of people. As of Friday evening, the death toll was 84, including two Americans, Sean Copeland from the Austin, Texas area, and his 11-year-old son, Brody. 25 people were on life support in hospitals in Nice. We'll have more details and analysis later. Just ahead of the Republican National Convention in Cleveland, which will start on Monday, Donald Trump has chosen his running mate. You'll hear CBS's John Dickerson on why Trump wants Mike Pence, governor of Indiana, to be his vice president.
He has strong ties to the social conservative part of the Republican Party, so he helps Trump cinch up that unity, which is a part of what he's trying to do here at the convention.
And Bob Schieffer will analyze our poll, which indicates Trump and Hillary Clinton are tied. But he is 12 points ahead among independent voters. So getting the Bernie Sanders left wing is not Clinton's main challenge.
I think it's in the middle where she's got to work on getting people. And this poll really shows it.
I'm Dan Revive. Stay tuned for a lot more on this Weekend Roundup. First, the mass murder committed by a lone attacker driving a big truck late Thursday night in Nice, France, during the celebration of the national holiday, Bastille Day. Here's the report we got the next morning from CBS News correspondent Elizabeth Palmer in Nice.
The driver barreled down the densely packed street. Witnesses say aiming to hit as many people as he could. Police repeatedly tried to shoot him, but he managed to accelerate away and hit dozens more. People fled in panic. Witnesses say some even jumped into the sea. American tourist Kayla Repon was on the promenade when she ran without knowing exactly what she was running from.
I mean, it seemed like everyone was running, you know, we were running away from something, but, you know, we were just turning down alleys and kind of looking for somewhere that might be safe.
For many, there was nowhere safe. The truck charged on for over a mile until police finally shot and killed the driver. Over 80 people, more than 10 of them children, were killed. The attacker has been formally identified. He's 31, a dual French-Tunisian citizen named Mohamed Lahoué Boulel, and he was known to the police for petty crimes. They found a handgun, an assault rifle, and fake hand grenades in his truck, and are now trying to determine if he acted alone. ISIS-linked terrorists staged two waves of attacks in France in 2015, which killed 147 people. Back then, President François Hollande declared that France was at war. After yesterday's attack, he said, France weeps. But France is strong and will always be stronger than the fanatics that strike at her.
Just after the fireworks celebrations, the elegant boulevard along the seashore in Nice was a slaughterhouse, corpses and badly wounded survivors scattered on the roadway. Authorities say the driver fired a gun at police. They fired back, as you hear, killing him. The onlooker who shot that video on his phone is Nader Al-Shafe.
All this time we thought it's an accident. Police surrounding the car and they started to shoot. In that moment I knew that something is wrong. And they saw me making a video of what's going on. So the police officer shouted and me screamed at me to go away because it was already gun shooting. He shouted at, he screamed at all the people on the beach, "Dégagez, run quickly, quickly." So I started to run with them. I thought like it's an accident and he lost control. So we thought, everyone thought it's an accident.
CBS News correspondent Seth Doan spoke the next day, Friday, with people who had run for their lives.
We were hearing from eyewitnesses stories of people running and hiding in bathrooms, in basements, knocking on strangers' doors to try to take refuge in homes. There was such chaos and confusion here. This, of course, was a celebratory evening, people celebrating Bastille Day. There were fireworks along this promenade here, and this is a very popular tourist destination. People come to this part of the Mediterranean to swim in the blue waters, to soak in that sun. This was a total change from that dreamland, really turning into a nightmare here. And we're also beginning to learn more about some of those victims and also the attacker.
And though the French government turned over the case to the anti-terrorism forces and prosecutor, what was known about the attacker, the truck driver?
Well, right now we know he is that 31-year-old French-Tunisian dual citizen. A local media with a very good police context has done some of the initial reporting here that it appears he was disgruntled, had recently lost his job, was looking toward a divorce. There have been no claims by ISIS at this point that links this man to them. Of course, this is a place where that is one of the fears, as you have people leaving this part of France, leaving Nice to go fight in that jihad in Syria. But there have been no official links made yet. And at least at these early stages, we're hearing from French media reporting that this may have been a disgruntled individual who was looking at losing a job and getting divorced.
So as of Friday evening, the 31-year-old Muslim born in Tunisia was not known to have been on any terror watch list. But this year he was convicted of road rage, throwing something at another driver. He was married with three kids, but as you heard, his marriage was breaking up. Longtime deputy director of the CIA, now a CBS News analyst, Michael Morell, said,
"We're not sure what motivated this individual to commit this horrific attack. But I think it's safe to assume that he was inspired by Islamic extremism. He was inspired by ISIS."
And this is a disturbing thought.
It's just a matter of time before we see attacks of this size here in the United States. I have no doubt about that.
With two major events about to begin in this country, the political conventions in Cleveland, then in Philadelphia, could mass murder be committed by a truck driver? Professor Michael Greenberger, a homeland security expert at the University of Maryland, comments on what happened in Nice.
There wasn't the kind of protection that we have at the 4th of July for our fireworks. When you see that truck, it is mammoth. It should have been nowhere near a celebration of this sort. And when you watch and see what happens in Cleveland, when you watch and see what happens in Philadelphia, when you watch and see what happens at our inauguration in January, we've been through three inaugurations since 9/11 without incident. This truck should have been kept out of that zone. It shouldn't have been anywhere near that area. There should have been barriers to prevent it from getting anywhere near that area. I think this, again, it's early. I could be proven wrong. But it seems to me the security there was not what it should be.
We'll have more coming up on security preparations for the Republican convention that begins Monday in Cleveland. You can hear our convention coverage on the radio or by using an app called CBS Radio News. It's a free app for your smartphone, CBS Radio News. In a moment, the Mike Pence pick by Trump on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, we turn our attention to the Republican National Convention. I'm Dan Revive. I'll be in Cleveland all this coming week, part of a large team from CBS News, to let you know what's going on. For sure, it'll end with Donald Trump officially confirmed as the party's nominee for President of the United States, with Indiana's Governor Mike Pence as Trump's running mate. The following week in Philadelphia, the Democrats will have their convention confirming Hillary Clinton as the candidate to be our country's first female president, her running mate not yet decided. This past week, a CBS News New York Times poll of over 800 randomly selected registered voters found a dead heat 40% for Trump, 40% for Clinton. 4 out of 5 Republicans say they will vote for Trump. 4 out of 5 Democrats say they have no doubt they'll vote for Clinton. What about independent voters? Trump has gained among them, now leading Clinton by 12 points. CBS News contributor Bob Schieffer comments.
He has opened up a big lead among independents. Independents are the people who are going to decide this race. I mean, I keep hearing about Democrats worried about, you know, how do we get to the Bernie Sanders people? How does Hillary Clinton get to the left of Bernie Sanders? I think it's in the middle where she's got to work on getting people, and this poll really shows it.
Bob Schieffer also notices that while 6 out of 10 Democrats say their party is united, especially after Bernie Sanders endorsed Hillary Clinton, it's a very different picture on the Republican side. 8 out of 10 Republicans in our poll say their party is divided, not united.
We have managed to come up with 2 people here on the Republican and the Democratic side that a majority of Americans don't like and even worse, don't trust. How does that happen? I mean, it seems to me that the main appeal of both candidates now is that they're not the other candidate.
Bob was speaking on CBS this morning. Trump confirmed on Friday that he has chosen Mike Pence as his running mate. They set their joint appearance for Saturday. CBS News political director John Dickerson commented on why Pence was attractive to Trump and his family and other advisors, even while Trump mentioned he was considering Governor Chris Christie and former House Speaker Newt Gingrich. On Governor Pence, a former congressman.
Well, he is not of Washington, but he has some Washington experience. And Donald Trump said he wanted to pick somebody who could help him actually get something done in Washington. He has strong ties to the social conservative part of the Republican Party, so he helps Trump cinch up that unity, which is a part of what he's trying to do here at the convention. And also, unlike somebody like Newt Gingrich, who's a bit of a rambunctious politician, Mike Pence is not somebody who's going to cause issues, or probably not somebody who's going to cause issues for the person at the top of the ticket in terms of behavior and staying on message.
And a question, how can Pence help unite the party?
In the delegates I've talked to here in Cleveland about the possibility of his pick and the naming of him, what they like about Pence is that they're worried that Donald Trump is going to be unpredictable, that he won't participate in the kind of compulsory exercises of campaigning that show that you're presidential. And what they see in the Pence pick is a kind of seriousness about governing. As one put it, he is a stabilizing pick, which means that Donald Trump has been kind of an attack dog as a candidate, so he doesn't need an attack dog in a vice president. What the delegates here are saying is they like the fact that Pence is a little bit more even-keeled, and that might add balance to the ticket so that they can compete in the fall.
John Dickerson is hosting his Sunday broadcast, Face the Nation, this weekend and next from the convention sites, and we'll be bringing you the weekend roundup here on the radio, also from Cleveland, then from Philadelphia. What was Hillary Clinton doing this past week? Conferring with advisors about who should be her running mate. She flew up to New Hampshire for that important joint appearance with Bernie Sanders, the senator from Vermont finally endorsing her. CBS News correspondent Nancy Cordes reports on Thursday Clinton was in Virginia on stage with that state's senator and former governor Tim Kaine.
Do you want a you're fired president or a you're hired president?
Kaine's resume has propelled him onto Clinton's shortlist. He's the former governor of a battleground state, a member of the Senate Armed Services Committee, and he speaks fluent Spanish.
Estamos listos para Hillary.
Still, he faces stiff competition from some of his Senate colleagues, all of whom met with Clinton at the Capitol. The tight-lipped bunch included Ohio's Sherrod Brown.
Good meeting, good meeting.
Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts, New Jersey's Cory Booker, and Vermont's Bernie Sanders, who got a standing ovation in the closed-door meeting after endorsing Clinton earlier this week.
She will be the next president of the United States.
He was unequivocal.
I have come here to make it as clear as possible as to why I am endorsing Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton will make an outstanding president, and I am proud to stand with her today.
That from CBS's Nancy Cordes. Now to Texas, President Obama flew to Dallas to speak for 40 minutes, a kind of sermon on policing, race relations, and grief at an interfaith service to remember the 5 police officers murdered by one man
who was killed after a standoff by a police bomb. Here's how Scott Pelley on the CBS Evening News on Tuesday reported Mr. Obama's remarks.
He eulogized the slain police officers of Dallas, but he seized this moment of national attention to plea for reason from both sides of a racial divide.
We wonder if an African-American community that feels unfairly targeted by police and police departments that feel unfairly maligned for doing their jobs can ever understand each other's experience. It's hard not to think sometimes that the center won't hold and that things might get worse.
The center was where the president hoped to draw both protesters and police. He criticized each for ignoring the truths to be found in the middle.
And when anyone, no matter how good their intentions may be, paints all police as biased or bigoted, we undermine those officers we depend on for our safety. When study after study shows that whites and people of color experience the criminal justice system differently. So that if you're black, you're more likely to be pulled over or searched or arrested. We cannot simply turn away and dismiss those in peaceful protest as troublemakers or paranoid.
Mr. Obama eulogized the five officers, but he also brought into the room the memory of the two men killed by police this month who were the reason for the Dallas protest.
But even those who dislike the phrase Black Lives Matter, surely we should be able to hear the pain of Alton Sterling's family, just as we should hear the students and co-workers describe their affection for Philando Castile as a gentle soul.
As a nation, Mr. Obama said, we ask too much of police and not enough of ourselves.
Liberals praise the president's speech as a fine balance, recognizing the incredibly hard job that police do, but also apparently unfair treatment of black men. Conservatives condemn what Mr. Obama said, as they got the impression he was labeling America's police as racists. Stay with us, a lot more on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
In business, risks and rewards come with every decision, like moving to the cloud with Office 365. While its benefits include anywhere access and lower costs, cyber threats and user errors can quickly wipe out data and the money you save. Barracuda Essentials for Office 365 provide an added layer of security and functionality for threat protection, email migration, data recovery, and quality of service. Move securely to Office 365. Visit barracuda.com/essentials to learn more.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Dan Raviv. The Obama administration has declassified 28 pages withheld from the report of the 9/11 Commission, including raw information about people in Saudi Arabia who might have helped some of the 19 hijackers. Unverified possible connections. Correspondent Sam Litzinger reports reaction.
The Saudi ambassador to the United States says, in essence, we told you so. In a statement, the kingdom says the so-called 28 pages should clear up once and for all any lingering questions or suspicions and confirm that neither the Saudi government or anyone acting on its behalf provided any support or encouragement for the September 11 attacks. The Saudis say they're working closely with the United States and other allies to eradicate terrorism and destroy terrorist organizations.
Let's consider whether people will be safe at the two political conventions here in the United States. The Republicans, starting this coming Monday in Cleveland. 1 week later, the Democrats have their convention in Philadelphia. Getting ready for the first big political gathering, CBS News Homeland Security correspondent Jeff Pagaz reported on Friday.
50,000 people are expected to attend the Republican National Convention at Cleveland's Quicken Loans Arena. The U.S. Secret Service is the lead agency, attempting to secure the event against the expected protest and the unexpected. Law enforcement is deploying high-tech tactics, including a video unit to document crowd management and police activity. Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson.
So I think we have to be concerned about things getting out of hand, very definitely, but there will be a lot of security and a lot of preparation in place.
The city has imposed a heightened security event zone throughout downtown Cleveland, and there is already a wide perimeter secure zone around Quicken Loans Arena, designated off-limits to vehicles. FBI Director James Comey.
So anytime there's a national spotlight on a political event in the United States, there's a risk that groups that aspire to do just that, to engage in acts of domestic terrorism, will be attracted.
In Nice, in an apparent terrorist attack, a truck was used to kill more than 80 people. The idea of using a vehicle as a weapon was floated in a 2010 issue of Al-Qaeda's Inspire magazine. The terror group called it a simple operation and gave instructions on how to kill the maximum number of pedestrians.
You have to be concerned about the one that you don't know, and that's the one that really concerns us.
You can't let your guard down.
Secret Service Director Joseph Clancy says he is preparing for the unknown.
Plan's never finished.
Cleveland is bringing in about 2,500 police officers from other cities and towns to bolster its own force of 1,500.
CBS's Jeff Pegues is at the Republican convention site in Cleveland on Friday. Let's turn to our senior national security analyst, Juan Zarate, as intelligence agencies and police in France examine the mass murder in Nice and that truck driver. The French prime minister says the attacker was linked to radical Islamist circles one way or another. Juan, what are the investigators looking for?
Any connections between this individual and known terrorist networks, in particular, and starting with networks and cells in France. Authorities so far indicating that they are not seeing that evidence. But what's happened with recent events and recent examples of radicalization is that individuals can often very quickly connect with radical messages and messengers and be radicalized and decide to mobilize and kill in massive and destructive ways, even if the original motivation is simply based on personal grievances. So authorities are going to be looking perhaps even for those final stages of radicalization, communications, emails, maybe watching particular types of videos that may indicate a particular intent and a reason why he was motivated to do what he did so horrifically in Nice.
And the scene of the crime, a massive celebration, fireworks for France's, in effect, Independence Day, Bastille Day. Should we expect that at a public gathering like that, after France has already had terrorism and is on alert, that a massive truck could even approach that seaside boulevard where pedestrians were out? It sure looks like a security failure.
Well, I think there are going to be a lot of questions asked about precisely that. You obviously can't secure all sites, mass gatherings. You don't want people to be restricted, especially on an Independence Day. You want people to enjoy the day. France was coming out of the Euro soccer championships on a bit of a high. But you're right. Not only was there the potential that someone could do this, but the reality that terrorists have used large VBIEDs, vehicle-borne explosive devices, to cause massive damage will raise a question as to why a major truck or vehicle like that was allowed into a pedestrian zone. Not only are the French going to be asking that question, but authorities around the world will be, especially as we march toward the Olympics and major events like the conventions.
As part of his reaction, the president, François Hollande, said his country's at war against terrorists. But where can France and its allies, including the U.S., do more than what they're doing?
Well, I think in three ways, Dan. I think the first is to accelerate intelligence sharing. Europe is good in isolation, the French, the British, at collecting intelligence, but they're terrible, the European continent in particular, terrible at sharing information. And I think accelerating that, breaking down walls between countries is critical given the threat. Second, dealing with the safe havens abroad. The French have been doing this in West Africa, North Africa, and certainly been supportive of the United States elsewhere. But the reality is you have a group like ISIS that has safe havens in major cities now for over 2 years, which allows them to recruit, to train, to plot, to strategize, to deploy. That's not good. And I think you're going to see the Europeans become a bit more militant about going after those safe havens. And then finally, trying to figure out ways of attacking the ideology, the underlying violent Islamic extremist ideology that holds purchase for individuals, even if they don't travel to safe havens, even if they're not deployed, but find some motivation from that narrative to attack fellow citizens. The Europeans have to do a better job of that, especially given the wave of refugees and problems that they've had within Europe.
That's CBS News senior national security analyst Juan Zarate. Juan, thank you very much.
Thank you, Dan.
Now, as we're about to launch intensive coverage of the two political conventions, Ron Simon, you teach at Columbia University, and you're the curator of television and radio at the Paley Center for Media in New York. You say this will be a strong season for Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and other digital apps.
the convention's always tied into the latest technology, whether it was the telegraph or radio, television, and now social media. Conventions always exploited that. So I think that this whole new social media world of Twitter and Facebook Live will really be tied into this convention. And certainly Donald Trump has exploited Twitter, and be really curious to see how social media now will become part of the convention experience.
If the convention organizers and the political parties are smart, they'll jump right on it, because otherwise their critics will take over all the tweets.
That is true. I mean, it's not just what you put on in-house. I mean, it was a way to present the party, to brand the party, but it's how people are experiencing it, what they are saying. And certainly, you know, Donald Trump is conscious of that, and I'm sure the party is as well.
There will be plenty of coverage in the weeks ahead from us at CBS Radio News, and please use our app for your smartphone. You also can follow us on Twitter at CBS Radio News, and I'm at Dan Ravive on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Dan Ravive. Now a chance to hear from two authors whose new book is highly critical of the Bush and Obama administrations for how they've conducted the wars against terrorists. Retired Lieutenant General Michael Flynn was head of the Defense Intelligence Agency until he was fired 2 years ago. He confirms that Donald Trump was considering him as a possible running mate. Flynn says that was an incredible honor. His co-author is Michael Ledeen, a historian with the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. Their book is called Field of Fight. It offers a plan to defeat ISIS and other terrorist groups. I spoke with them both, starting with General Flynn. I asked if he and others had that kind of plan while in the U.S. military.
Yeah, I think that what we were doing in the Pentagon is we were trying to get this administration to clearly define this enemy, and we were wanting to have this administration take this on as a much bigger strategy, and there's a military component, but there's really a discrediting of the ideology that we're facing. And this administration had really refused to do that, and frankly made the rest of government, you can't even use the phrase radical Islam in government these days.
One of the points we make in Field of Fight is that every time we have seriously engaged our enemies on the battlefield, we've won. And then we left. So what we should have done in Iraq was to stand up and say, is to attack the doctrine, to expose the hollowness of their doctrines. Once we defeated al-Qaeda, our president should have said to al-Qaeda and their followers, so what happened here? You guys all this time have been telling us that you win because you have divine support. And you have divine support because you do it right. You're the right sort of Muslim and so forth. So what happened here?
Yeah, you lost on the battlefield.
Yeah, now you lost. What happened? Did Allah change sides?
Are you saying the U.S. administration should have tried to shame
yes,
the Muslim radicals?
To expose the hollowness of their doctrine. When you're fighting an ideological war, we did this all through the 20th century. We did it with fascists, Nazis, communists, and so on. We were always eager to show that the doctrine was wrong, that their view of the world was wrong. Well, you've heard it from lots of people. There are lots of people who say it, but you haven't heard it, as far as I know, from presidents, secretaries of state, secretaries of defense, and so on.
So no. They've been soft.
Well, they're barred from using the expression radical Islam. That has been censored out of our official language.
They came to the conclusion that that would upset Islamic countries and populations that we do turn to be our friends.
Yeah, but that's nonsense, because they know perfectly well who they are and what's going on.
But what good would it do? That those words would save how many lives?
Well, we're facing mass movement, and so showing that the doctrine is false and the promises are false helps generate defectors and so forth. It weakens the movement. These movements are ideological.
And to me, we had too much focus on sort of the Washington, D.C. navel, if you will, staring at our Washington, D.C. navel instead of actually from a defense standpoint supporting our warriors out in the field. That was really my ultimate goal, was to change that culture, change that attitude, and also really honestly speak in a very candid way to our political leadership, and they didn't want to hear it.
2 years ago, you were fired by the Obama administration. You've written, or at least hinted, that it was because of what you said about the United States not being tough enough in identifying the enemy and saying it's radical jihadism. But it's more than just words and phrases.
Yeah, it's the doctrine. We have to attack the doctrines of this enemy. We attack the doctrines of communism. We attack the doctrines of Nazism and fascism. And we're not allowed to attack the doctrines of this radical Islamism.
Whether it's the White House or diplomats, say, in the State Department, they say we need Muslim countries to be our allies. Jordan has been useful. We hope Egypt will be helpful. Turkey, others, we sometimes do turn to Saudi Arabia for help. So they say we don't want to label the enemy as Islam.
We have to take these countries to task and ask. We need to use tough diplomacy and demand more from them to be able to stand up and be counted against what they know. These leaders know that this cancer inside of their system is going to crush this entire world if they don't get their act together. So they're going to have to stand up and be counted. And frankly, this is going to have to come with U.S. leadership, but it's really putting the burden where it belongs, which is on the Muslim world, to take care of this cancer inside of their own body.
We're at the one-year mark when it comes to the nuclear deal with Iran. Is it clear to you, and I mean as an intelligence professional, that deal is deeply flawed?
Oh, it's hugely flawed. And frankly, Iran hasn't even signed it. They're getting away with literally murder. I mean, that was the worst deal. We got nothing out of it. We gave so much, and we got nothing, very little back. I still can't figure out what we got back.
I've heard from other intelligence professionals that if there would be more weapons inspectors going in or nuclear inspectors going in, hey, that could be an intelligence bonanza for the West and even Israel. Could be.
But they don't go in. They're not permitted in.
Right. And where are they allowed to go? And knowing the fact that we have to telegraph when we want to be there and where we're going to go, and then that gives them a chance to do all sorts of things. So it's deeply flawed, and there should have been a whole series of other demands before we even brought Iran into the room.
Is it clear? Some experts say we'll have to see how it plays out.
What do we have to show for it? We've given them billions of dollars. We've given them long-term understandings, agreements, we say. But, of course, there's no document on this thing. No one ever signed anything. There was never a formal agreement. That does not exist. And so what they say we agreed to changes a lot.
What about the latest on Iran's behavior? Because in Field of Fight, there is information on that, too, that Iran has been supporting terrorists, that Iran has been, in effect, killing Americans since their Islamic Revolution.
Sure. State Department just once again declared them the world's greatest sponsor of terrorism. The Iranians are marching every day chanting death to America. What do you think they have in mind?
Are we winning or losing right now in the war on terror?
We're losing.
Michael Flynn, a lieutenant general who was forced to retire 2 years ago, now an outspoken critic of the Obama administration, with his co-author Michael Ledeen. Their book is titled Field of Fight. Now our Weekend Roundup commentator Charles Grodin with a need, he says, for passionate points to be made to your friends sometimes.
I've been fortunate in having a number of friends during the years, men and women. There's also lessons to be learned. One of my male friends died young from lung cancer. Every day I chastised myself for not being more aggressive in trying to stop him from smoking. When I did become more aggressive, he was hooked up to so many tubes it was too late. Two close women friends, when they became ill, put their faith in their religions and chose not to see doctors. They also died young. When I first learned of their situations, I stepped in aggressively, but it was too late. Since all of that, I've tried to be more aware, and when there's something threatening, I say something. I'm Charles Grodin for the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
Up next, an incredible court-martial story and more on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
Get the latest information when you want it. Download the CBS Radio News app, either on iOS or Android. You also get great features, breaking news, and access to the CBS Radio News Twitter and Facebook feeds. Learn about your world while you take care of all the things you need to take care of. It's perfect for the gym, running errands, or doing chores around the house. CBS Radio News. Get it in the Apple App Store or Google Play today.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Dan Revive.
Great Britain, for the second time in its long history, has a female prime minister. Her name is Theresa May. Correspondent Vicky Barker in London reported on the quick replacement process Wednesday.
One prime minister is history, another is installed. David Cameron in his final prime minister's question time.
Other than one meeting this afternoon with Her Majesty the Queen, the diary for the rest of my day is remarkably light.
By tea time, the Queen had accepted Cameron's resignation and formally offered the job to Theresa May, who aimed her first speech at Britain's struggling families.
If you're one of those families, if you're just managing, I want to address you directly.
And she did. This former Home Secretary listing her country's social, racial, and economic injustices and promising to try to right them. Also promising that Britain's impending divorce from Europe will not mean disengagement from the wider world. Vicky Barker, CBS News, London.
Britain has two female leaders, if you think about it. The figurehead but important symbol of the nation, Queen Elizabeth, looking terrific at age 90, and the new prime minister, 59-year-old Theresa May. The only other woman who was prime minister in Britain was the late Margaret Thatcher in the 1980s. Iris Bonnet, you're a researcher at Harvard University, author of a new book about gender equality called What Works. Now, you have evidence that women can succeed as leaders, but many men in the executive ranks don't seem to accept that.
That is right, and it is true for both female and male managers, because seeing really is believing, and as long as we don't see women in those leadership positions, we don't naturally associate those jobs with women. So what's happening in the UK right now is very exciting.
It's happening certainly on a political level, and of course in the United States, Hillary Clinton might become president. That would be an interesting example even for American businesses if Clinton becomes president.
Absolutely, and there's research suggesting that this actually can matter, and it changes what both men and women think is possible.
You have research on bias, the assumptions that women can't be leaders, can't be superstars, perhaps as business executives, maybe because they're the ones who have the children. Is that the key?
It goes way beyond that, and it's not just women who are victim of bias, but also men. It really goes back to what I mentioned earlier, that is, seeing is believing. If we don't see male kindergarten teachers, we don't naturally associate those jobs with men. And if we don't see female CEOs or presidents or prime ministers, we don't naturally associate those jobs with women. Women tend to fall into something that we call the competence likability dilemma, where we tend to either perceive a woman as complying with our gender-specific norms of what a good woman looks like, and then we like her, or she tends to be assertive, and in which case we don't tend to like her. In fact, Theresa May has already been victim to this bias. Somebody, actually a colleague, has called her a bloody difficult woman, and I wonder whether this is due to the fact that she is female.
No one would say that about a male politician, you figure.
I don't know. It'll be interesting to watch whether that is something that she's up against. And of course, she is an expert because she was the Minister for Women and Equality and was instrumental in increasing gender diversity on the UK's corporate boards.
Well, in What Works, you write about lower expectations for women. But is that because women are expected to behave in a certain way? I mean, as you've suggested, trying to be friendly or be liked. Or is it about childbearing? You didn't sort of take up that point, whether a corporation might feel, I guess in a sexist way, the woman's not going to be available to me. She might be busy with her family.
Well, there's both. I mean, we can actually show that there's gender bias independent of whether a woman has a child or not. And there's also something that we call the motherhood penalty. So you're certainly right that part of what we're observing is due to the inequities that we still see at home, that men and women don't share home care equally.
And in a country like the United States, are things getting better?
We are improving slowly, but very, very slowly. But there are certainly promising lights out there, such as new tech companies, which have developed tools to help companies de-bias how they hire, how they promote, how they do performance appraisals. And that's, I think, the direction we really have to go in, leveling the playing field for everyone, independent of what they look like, whether it's gender or race or any other demographic characteristics.
Iris Bonnet, the author of What Works, Gender Equality by Design, published by Harvard University Press. Iris Bonnet, thanks very much.
Thanks very much for having me, Dan.
Now, surprising stories about military trials in a book by Chris Bray. Chris, your book is titled Court Martial. There's so much history here. How about the future baseball star Jackie Robinson, who'd become the first black player in the major leagues? He was court-martialed while in the Army?
He was court-martialed for the same thing that Rosa Parks did not long after. He was on an Army bus at what used to be Fort Camp Hood, Texas. And a white bus driver saw him sit down next to a woman who looked white to him. She was a light-skinned black woman, and he refused to go to the back of the bus. And the bus driver called to the MPs. When the MPs arrived, white privates and sergeants addressed him with a racial epithet, and he lost his temper at the military police, understandably, because they were speaking to him with disrespect, and he was an officer, and they didn't want to take notice of that status. And he was acquitted. He was acquitted of every charge he faced.
So that's about Lieutenant Jack, or Jackie, Robinson. And you have a story from 1815 where six Army soldiers are convicted of desertion and what happened before the firing squad.
Six men were shot, and one of them cried, and he was shot, and nobody had much to say about it. They were ashamed that he had lost his manly composure at the end. But there was this soldier, Henry Lewis, who, as he was being stood up in front of the firing squad, said to the colonel commanding the firing squad, "I demand that you acknowledge that I have fought as a soldier with courage." And the colonel, who was in charge of the firing squad, said, "Yes, I acknowledge that you've been a brave soldier." And then he was shot. And none of the men on his firing squad were able to kill him. They didn't have the strength to kill this man whose courage they had just acknowledged.
So Lewis is terribly wounded. In fact, they made the prisoners kneel on their coffins. He falls off the coffin. You describe him crawling back onto the coffin, and even then he's trying to speak as a hero. They did not go ahead and shoot him some more, did they?
That's right. He crawled back on his coffin, and he said to the colonel commanding the firing squad, "Have I not behaved with courage?" And the colonel was so stunned by what he had done that he called for surgeons and demanded that they save his life. They failed. But he redeemed himself. Even though he had deserted from the Army, he had shown courage, so he was still a soldier.
A unique kind of heroism, one of many stories in this book called Court Martial. That's the author, Chris Bray. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
A few more words about politics and the race for president, our big focus here on the radio in the next 2 weeks. Starting Monday, the Republican National Convention in Cleveland, Donald Trump's convention. The following week, starting July 25th, the Democrats and Hillary Clinton have their convention in Philadelphia. We'll have plenty of coverage. Please download our app for your smartphone. The free app is CBS Radio News. The Weekend Roundup is produced in the Washington Bureau of CBS News by Howard Arenstein. Till Cleveland, coming soon on Monday, I'm Dan Revive, CBS News.